This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. It's 7:36, Monday, the 15th of August. And as usual, after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we're going to have a very interesting breakfast grill. Who is in the hot seat today, Philip C?
I will be grilling Karina Litvak. She's the chairman of the Climate Governance Initiative. Now, they work with boards around the world to accelerate the net zero transition and establish the global network of national and regional chapters in 53 countries worldwide. But you know, Xiaoning, the biggest question is, if you compare and look right, investors, management and boards, why are boards always behind the curve with respect to climate change? Because you hear so much about investors pushing into ESG funds. You hear S&P calls where management is pushing for ESG, but you always invariably hear that board members are just behind the curve with respect to pushing for this climate change agenda.
Maybe because they are concerned that if you shift towards this ESG agenda, there might be some revenue shortfall and everybody wants to drag their feet, and usually there's some cost involved.
The issue, right? Short versus long-term, whether you need to reimagine a business model differently, that requires a very much structural transformational shift.
Yeah, either change quickly or be changed. I think that's the mantra. So do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, after examining the GDP of Malaysia, we now turn our attention to Down Under, taking a look at the Australian economy, where inflation hit a 21-year high in June at 6.1%, which was more than twice the pace of wage growth. Transport costs alone rose 13%, while prices of non-discretionary goods and services were up by 7.6%.
In response to that, the Reserve Bank of Australia in its August policy meeting raised rates by 50 basis points to 1.85%, bringing a total of 175 basis points of hikes since May. However, as interest rates surge, Australia's once booming property market is facing headwinds as prices are falling at rates comparable to the start of the global financial crisis. In Sydney alone, values are down 5.2% when compared to the peak in January.
So is this price decline reflected in the rest of the country, and will the RBA continue their rate hikes? And is there even the possibility of a recession in this lucky country? For some answers, we speak to Catherine Birch, senior economist at ANZ Research. Good morning. Thank you for joining us, Catherine. Now, inflation, like we said, jumped to a 21-year peak of 6%, while in the US, it has shown signs of reaching peak inflation. But is it the same for Australia?
Well, we think that annual inflation is going to continue to rise over the remainder of 2022 and get above 7%. But we think that we're past the peak in quarterly inflation. Having said that, quarterly inflation is still going to remain pretty strong over the second half of this year. The regulated retail market here means most households are only now seeing higher electricity and gas prices in their bills, which is quite different from other parts of the world. And there are also second order effects from these higher prices. So businesses are still increasingly passing on these cost rises.
So how does that translate into rate hikes? Because the Reserve Bank of Australia has lifted its cash rate by 50 basis points to 1.85% in August. What are your expectations in terms of rate hikes going forward?
Well, we're expecting the RBA will take the target cash rate above 3% by the end of this year. So we could see another 150 basis points of hikes. And that would be, in both our and their view, in restrictive territory. And we think they're going to need to get past just that neutral point, given that demand is a key driver of inflation here. They don't want inflation expectations to shift too much higher. We've got a tight labour market, and of course we've got that global backdrop with a lot of central banks around the world hiking quite quickly.
But this rate hike has also been a dampener in terms of the property market, right? So home sales actually fell 13.1% in July, new home sales. Do you see this happening, continue to happen in Australia?
Yes, we do. And I think housing prices are going to fall about 15% from the national peak in April to the end of 2023. But the reason we think housing prices and sales will be falling is because of reduced borrowing capacity. So that will be the main driver rather than forced selling. And households do have some buffers still as well. So households have been able to build up significant savings over this time, which will put a floor under the housing market. But also we've got a very strong labour market at the moment. So a big reason that often people fall behind on repayments is they lose their job and their income. And with such a tight labour market, it's hard to see that happening in the near term.
That's why I was wondering and worried, right? Because with rate hikes going up to 3%, aren't we worried about the household balance sheets then? Because you seem to imply that they are quite resilient.
Yeah, so I mean, Australia has one of the highest household debt to income ratios in the world, but if you, and it has risen over the past decade or so, but if you net out the amount that households have saved in offset accounts and deposit accounts, actually it's a bit lower than around the time of the GFC. And we look at household debt servicing, so interest payments as a share of income. Yes, we're expecting them to rise to around 11% of income, which would be higher than the 9% in the years immediately pre-pandemic, but it's still lower than the 12 to 13% pre-GFC.
But at the same time, retail sales in June actually rose slightly by 0.2% to a record $34 billion Australian, which was still below analyst expectations. Yeah, how should we read this number? Is inflation really beginning to bite in Australia?
Look, it is, and consumer confidence is at recessionary lows, and the high inflation and falling real wages are a big reason for that. But even though consumer confidence is still so low, we're still seeing households spend up on discretionary goods and services. So even though overall retail sales only rose 0.2% in June, dining and takeaway rose 2.7%. And spending on travel and things like that are still rising as well. And that's a similar story to what we're seeing across in New Zealand, who is 7 months ahead of the hiking cycle compared with Australia. But demand is still really strong over there too.
And, you know, Catherine, let's take a broader view of the economy, because in the early part of the year, we felt, oh, Indonesia, Australia, all would be, you know, doing pretty well because commodity prices were roaring upwards, right? But that's a very different tune now, isn't it, as we enter the second half of the year. How does, you know, challenging commodity prices, which are declining now, affect the Australian economy?
Look, Australia has benefited significantly from higher commodity prices, given that we are a net exporter, and that has benefited, for example, government revenue as well. But obviously it is households and businesses that have really felt the pinch of higher energy and other input prices. So now that we are starting to see some commodity prices come off again, that should ease some of the pressure on businesses and on households, particularly given that petrol prices are a key thing that households face and which really feeds into inflation expectations quite strongly.
Yeah, so the households benefit, but what about the broader economy? Because Australia is heavily reliant on mining and commodity shipments, right? I think it generates as close to 104 billion Australian export earnings in the year. So what happens when, you know, there's a shift towards low carbon and renewables and its sources of energy though?
Look, there will definitely be a shift which will bring some challenges, but Australia does have significant opportunities on renewables and critical minerals needed for the decarbonisation process globally as well. So while it will require a shift in sectors and increased investment to actually, you know, increase the supply of both renewable energy sources, the transmission, the storage, as well as the minerals required, Australia does have significant export opportunities in these spaces. So we're not only confined to the fossil fuel and the iron ore exports.
I guess Shani is also alluding to how interconnected Australia's economy is to the global, shifts and trends, right? And I guess climate is a midterm, long-term challenge. But in the short term, right, we have these concerns of recessionary environments happening around the world. How do these global immediate shocks affect Australia's economy in the short term?
Look, we're not expecting Australia's economic growth to slow below trend until late 2023. So even though we think rates will get into restrictive territory and we are seeing this global slowdown, we think there's enough demand and enough of a gap between current demand and supply that things will keep trucking along pretty well, at least into early 2023. And a big reason for that is the labour market. It's really hard to see a sharp deterioration in the Australian economy in the near term when the labour market is so strong. And given there are almost 500,000 job vacancies across the country, we actually expect unemployment rate will fall below 3% by early next year.
So, Catherine, then it seems very unlikely that the lucky country will slide into a recession then, right?
We're not expecting a recession, of course. There are potential future shocks, and perhaps there are some areas of weakness that will be showing up. But at this stage, we're not expecting a recession in the next couple of years.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Catherine Birch, Senior Economist at ANZ Research, reminding us that Australia still remains very lucky, unlikely to slip into a recession despite some pain points, inflation being one of them, property prices coming under pressure. But otherwise, the economy is still chugging along quite nicely.
1 million job vacancies for a population of 30 million people. Incredible stuff.
Well, for the longest time during COVID-19, they shut all their borders, right? So a lot of, let's say, fruit picking was question marks about who's going to do it, right? So I think they're going to probably restart some of their immigration policies. But up next, we'll be speaking to Tom Wright, co-author of The Billion Dollar Whale, on Najib's final appeal at federal court, which starts today. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.